Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Welcome back into Drive Time Sports. We are live from the Sutherland Studios, and we are going to talk NBA basketball. It's starting to heat up. You know, we get this big gap in between the NFL now with the Super Bowl, which means the NBA is really going to be king of the national sports scene. It's not going to have much competition, at least for the next few weeks. That's what we're going to talk about right now. Where's your team sitting, and who are some squads that are kind of making a statement? We're going to have that conversation right now with our NBA analyst. We have James Holish joining us over the phone right now. James, it's great to get you back on again.
Bless you for not saying NBA insider or expert, because I'm neither one of those things. But
you are an expert. You are an expert. You are an analyst. And you always have some great takes, man. And I think that's kind of what everyone's looking for right now. We're past that midway point in the season. Before you know it, the trade deadline is going to be here. And I think the first 41 games, however you want to dictate it now, with the NBA trade deadline being in February, kind of sets the stage, right, for what we're going to see over the final 30 or so games. And there are some teams that I think have positioned themselves, James, to be very active over the next week or week and a half in trade talks to kind of propel them. Because right now, specifically in the Eastern Conference, right, you got some teams at the very top, Cleveland and Boston. I'll go ahead and throw New York in there just so we're not offending any Knicks fans. But I go over to the Western Conference, and we got OKC, Houston, Memphis. I think there's some vulnerability there if teams can push the right buttons here over the next week, week and a half.
You're right. The NBA middle class is probably bigger than it has been in a while. Teams that aren't, you know, you wouldn't call them a contender, but they're definitely not bottom feeders. And there's parity is the key word. So I think there's probably a big section of the league that, you know, maybe they feel are move or two away from making the conference finals. And that's actually a good thing for the league.
I think it's a great thing. Yeah, I really do. I still believe in the Eastern Conference, cream of the crop is going to be Cleveland and Boston. The Western Conference, it's Oklahoma City, and I don't really know who else. I know that Houston and Memphis has kind of created some space, so let's start there. Right, who are some teams in your mind that can make the right trade here in the next 10 days that can put them in contention with OKC in a seven-game set?
I'm going to look at a team like Memphis. They got the star power, right? Ja at the top, and right now, Jaren Jackson Jr. is playing like an All-NBA type guy. Like he's really ascended this year. He's punishing teams inside and out, and he's rebounding pretty well. A team like Denver. So Denver started off the year catastrophically bad. They were really bad at the beginning of the season. Jamal Murray looked like a shell of himself. But they really rounded in the form. And Westbrook in their starting lineup has really been like the trigger. And obviously Murray playing again like he's a borderline or, you know, all-star type level guy. That makes a lot of difference. Aaron Gordon, though, has been the swingman for them. And he hasn't been swingman as far as the talent-wise. Are they going to be great or not? And he hasn't been looking great lately. So that's going to be a key. So they could use some help, I think. They could use maybe a little more size, one more big, because I don't think DeAndre Jordan is the answer. For a team like Memphis, I think I'm not sure what they need, but because they're deep. But once that rotation slices, they might need one more kind of high-level ball handler, one more guy to slide in between Ja and Jaren Jackson, because Desmond Bane has been a little up and down this year. So those teams in the West, I think, and Houston's a dark horse. They have issues closing games. So let's say for some reason they did do a Jimmy Butler trade, he'd make a heck of a lot of difference for them as far as somebody who can be like their closer. But I think they're still a year away.
I don't know what Houston really needs, right? One of the things that stands out to me about the Rockets, they're very good defensively. When they want to crack down, they can be very, very good on the defensive side of the ball, and I think that bodes well for them once they get to the postseason. I do believe two teams outside of the top four right now that if they can stay healthy and make a right move, I don't know that you'd want to play the Lakers or the Clippers, and I'm curious to see what these two teams do here over the next 10 days.
Totally agree, especially for a team like the Clippers. They, Kawhi Leonard is that kind of superstar when he's on the court. Can he stay on the court? James Harden is still very, very good when he's allowed to handle the ball and run the offense, and he's been great. The Clippers have probably blown away all expectations. I still think you can't just lose 25-5 like they did in Paul George and think that once you hit the playoffs, you're going to be quite the threat. Norm Powell has done great. He's an all-star level guy as far as production this year. But, I mean, once you hit the playoffs and teams can really – lock into what you're doing, you need more guys who can really kind of break the defense. And I don't know if they have enough there in Clipperland. Like you said, the Lakers, their top-end talent with LeBron James at his best and Anthony Davis, they're incredible, and we've seen it. Like they put the straps to the Celtics the other day. They beat them pretty good. They strapped the Warriors again. Warriors have no answer for LeBron James. But in the playoffs, high-level teams are going to game plan. And LeBron James, we've seen, he can't bring it every night. And Austin Reeves has to be better every night. He hasn't been that guy like they need him to be. I think they need a third guy. They might need another big guy, too. So both of those teams definitely have the ceiling, but their constant floor might not be high enough.
Correct. Yeah, no, I agree with that. In terms of bigs that are available out there, they could help these squads. And this is kind of going on the opposite direction as we flip over to the Eastern Conference. When you take a look at the Indiana Pacers, right now I feel like this is a team just stuck in the mud. I look at this roster, and there's a couple of nice pieces, but I don't see this team getting any higher than 4 or 5 in the Eastern Conference. And if you're 4 or 5 in the Eastern Conference, you're going to run into Cleveland or Boston in the second round, and you're going to get beat up. If you're, you know, in that 3 to 6 range, let's say you get out of the first round, you're going to run into Boston. I believe you're going to get beat up. Would it make sense for Indiana to move on from Miles Turner at this particular time, knowing that there are teams that I think may even overpay value-wise to make something work, not necessarily in a desperation-type move, but maybe looking at Miles Turner and saying, hey, he's that last piece, because when you look at the big market, I think he stands out.
So for me, it's interesting because I can understand that logic, but like also he also is what makes the Pacers kind of dangerous, right? He's like a Kristaps Porzingis light. Right, he spaces the floor. He protects the rim. He's not quite the post-up threat that Porzingis is against mismatches, but he's 6'10". He's young enough that you can pair him with a guy like Tyrese for years to come. And I think if you trade him, you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul, because sure you might bolster your perimeter offense or get a big man or something, but now you're going to miss rim protection. So I don't see a trade out there. Any move I think they make with Miles would be lateral.
Fair. No, that makes a lot of sense as well. Makes a lot of sense. Another team of the Eastern Conference causing waves today, the Miami Heat. They have suspended Jimmy Butler indefinitely. He walked out a shoot-around after he found out he was not going to start. They need to get this done, right? And I think that there's multiple ways we can look at this. First off, let's start with the Butler deal. They need to get it done, James. I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm sure everyone around the organization is tired of hearing about it. I think NBA fans are sick and tired of this. And I think all that's going on right now is diminishing the character of Jimmy Butler, right, wrong, or indifferent. I mean, you can sit here and say he's the one causing this issue. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. I don't know what's going on behind closed doors. All I know is that day by day, you are diminishing his value because this looks like more and more of a headache, maybe more so than we would have initially thought 3 weeks ago.
Look, man, I'm a working schmo, and that's breaking news to me. I didn't know that, and I'm trying not to laugh out loud right now. Because you're absolutely right, man. It's become a farce. Credit, I don't know if you credit Pat Riley, if you ridicule Pat Riley for really believing that they could tell Jimmy Butler, hey, man, we're not going to extend you. And he says, okay, I wouldn't take if you extended it now anyway. And thinking that he'd be a professional and they could play it out this season, he would, you know, go into the next season with a good relationship between him and Miami Heat. And I'm going to say it's mostly him, because we've seen him this multiple times, right? Multiple teams he's done, it's been kind of a cantankerous, ornery exit. And this is just, Pat Riley is not going to be pushed around. He didn't let LeBron push him around. He didn't let Dwayne Wade and his legendary set push him around. He wasn't going to let Jimmy Butler push him around, and Butler wants to push him around. The whole thing when he missed the flight, hey, man, I cannot fly myself out there. I got this other stuff going on. They said, nope, you need to be on team flight. He didn't show up. This is another case. You came back from suspension. They're trying to lean into the young kid some, and, you know, he's not giving full effort. So, like, hey, come off the bench. He walks out of shoot-around. So it's become such a distraction. I was listening to a Miami pod, and a Miami beat writer was saying that at the last game, all the spirits were high without him. Spiritual high, the warm-up was nice and loose. All the guys seemed happy and, like, really loose. He has to go because he's making it about himself, and the Heat have all been about team. And it's kind of sad, but as a Celtics fan, I love it.
Yeah, as far as Pat Riley is concerned, the idea of Heat culture, which we hear about so much, right? In baseball, we hear about the Cardinal way. In the NFL for so long, we heard about the Patriot way. Heat culture is kind of that in the NBA. And the reason why that term exists, I know it's made up, right? I mean, it's not a real thing. It's just, it's made up. The reason why, though, it became a thing in the NBA circle is because of the way Pat Riley operates. I think it's comical that Jimmy Butler thought he was going to get his way in Miami because, as you alluded to, Pat Riley didn't let the big three of Bosh, LeBron, and D-Wade push him around. That's not the way he operates. I think in today's game, where I still have such an old school mind, because, you know, we grew up in different eras of the NBA, and I've had a hard time really adapting to what we see today. Pat Riley still lives in the 90s. That's still the era that he lives in, and that's the way that he is going to operate in Miami. And so I respect it fully. Is it the recipe for success? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, it's got its own term, right? It's got its own mantra because that's the way they operate.
I 100% respect it because, like you said, it's rooted in the franchise. You got legends like Dwayne Wade to buy in. LeBron James, hey, he didn't like it, and he left because of it. But guess what? Everyone still respects Pat Riley because of that. He didn't want to bend and kowtow to LeBron James' entourage. The story of him famously throwing LeBron's cookies off the plane, like, that's how it is. And up until right now, it's worked, right? The proof is in the pudding. Jimmy Butler led two of those teams to the finals, basically on Heat culture, because they weren't the most talented teams. They were injured. They were missing Tyler Hero, and they were just literally fighting and scrapping their way to the NBA Finals. That's what Heat culture is about. And now Jimmy Butler's trying to make it about Jimmy Butler, not Heat culture. And that's fine. That's his prerogative. But like you said, I think it's a really bad look for Jimmy Butler.
James, I want to move on to talk about your Boston Celtics for a moment. look, man, I'm still a believer. I know that was a yucky loss to the Lakers just a couple of days ago. But the fact is, when an East Coast team goes over the West Coast, they had a sloppy game against Clippers, which they lost in overtime. 9 out of 10 times, I don't care how good you are, you're going to lose the second day of a back-to-back when, again, you're an East Coast team playing on the West Coast. Just take a look at the Vegas odds makers. This is the way it works. It's difficult for East and West to travel across country, play back-to-back games. It's just the way it works, right? While there may be some concern here with Boston, and you and I have talked about this over the last couple of months, you also have to look at the fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers are not playing lights-out basketball. They, too, have now lost 3 in a row. It is what happens during the course of an 82-game season.
Not only that, I think Cleveland is 5-5 or maybe 5-6 in their last 11.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Maybe 5-7 ever since, they had that nice long with a 15-game winning streak.
Yep.
So they've come back down to earth a little bit, even healthy, right? So my thing with the Celtics, I get it. There's always a championship hangover, but as someone who watches the team, you know, under a microscope, I've noticed some things. I think a big thing is that they've struggled a little bit, getting Porzingis reacclimated. But Porzingis is not, you know, he's a big piece of the team, and I think they kind of overdid it the first few weeks as far as force feeding him the ball, trying to get him post ups, and they got away from their own offense, and it shows. So that's one issue. I also think maybe something's going with Jaylen Brown. Jaylen normally starts a little slow, and then about January he starts getting to his groove. But his last 11 games, I think I saw he was shooting 41% from the floor, 26% from three. He's just not playing well, that's an issue. But good, like you said, West Coast road trips in January, and they ended up 6-2. That's not bad at all. And since December 15th, even though the offense has slipped and they went 12-9, they were still a top 10 offense, and they were the number 2 defense, and they were number 3 in net rating. So as a pessimist, and it's not fun watching your team play poorly, and I've been kind of down on them because they've been playing ugly basketball, but they're still an elite team. So I think they're going to get it together. Maybe they need the All-Star break. It's been a lot of basketball the last 2-3 years for those guys. They're maybe wearing down. But, they're showing glimmers. Derek White broke out last game. Good win against the Mavs. So I'm not too worried. But it doesn't look good for Boston after the successful year last year and the great start.
James, before I let you go, I do want to get some thoughts on the Utah Jazz, now 10-33. Again, the Jazz will return to the court tonight. We'll have live coverage of that game beginning at 6:50. Tip-off's going to follow at 7. David Lockron Boone will bring you the play-by-play call. The Jazz now just one team below them, and that is the lowly Washington Wizards at 6-38. We saw a trade last week where the Jazz send 3 first-round picks to the Phoenix Suns for an unprotected first-round pick in 2030. I think for a lot of Jazz fans, it's kind of deflating, but the fact of the matter is, you have too many assets, you can't cash in all these draft picks, and we're just waiting for something to happen next. I think what happens next is Utah moves on from Colin Sexton and Walker Kessler. That seems to be the only direction that Utah can move next. I'm curious to see what they can net for either of those two players, if not a package deal. But it seems inevitable at this point, right? You got to move on from Kessler. You got to move on from Sexton. Those two have some value within this roster. And if you do that, you have a legitimate chance of falling below Washington by the end of the year.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Clarkson, too. I haven't watched as much Utah because, like, you know.
Why would you? Listen, man, there are Jazz fans that don't want to watch the Jazz, so why would you?
I will say this. They've been competitive in a lot of first halves, and then they fall apart second halves because they're not a good team. So I wonder if Danny Ainge, a little bit like you said, Pat Riley, he's a kind of a relic. And it's hard for him, I think, to really tank. Because he did the same thing in Boston, right? Where they were always kind of competitive and scrappy. And, you know, they could have got the number one pick. Luckily, they did the trade with the Nets. And they got the two elite picks with Tatum and Brown. Because otherwise, they were never a super, like, let's bottom out team. And I wonder if he's ever going to do it. Because you're absolutely right. If you're the Utah Jazz and you're the fans, sure, you're tanking. Let's tank. Let's stop this competitive win games we shouldn't win. Let's do it because, I mean, let the record sag for Flag, right? Cooper Flag looks amazing. The Harper kid looks amazing. This is a year where if you want to get somebody to go with Markkanen, you know, if you're not going to move Markkanen next year or whatever, then it's the year. So they're kind of straddling the low-hanging fence, and they got to just hop on that other side and just ship off those guys. Kessler should get you something. Like you said, what's his name?
Walker Kessler, Colin Sexton?
Sexton should get you, like, something juicy. And even if it's not that juicy, it's time. You already have a war chest of picks and assets that rivals OKC's. It's time. Just go all in, bottom out, you know, bite down and bear it for one, you know, one last stretch of just terrible basketball. And then next year you have a great young coach. Next year you really get things in motion.
We'll end with this as far as the Utah Jazz are concerned. And this is – we're tilling that line there, right? So the Utah Jazz, their G League affiliate, signed Isaiah Thomas today because Isaiah Thomas is making yet another run at getting back into the NBA. At first, I didn't think this dude was real. I really didn't think this was real. But he's going to sign with the Stars. He's going to be playing in Salt Lake. He's going to make another run at it. It's the second stint with the Stars. Can you recall a potential NBA career that has more lives than Isaiah Thomas, who just will not go away? I mean, we see this guy every single season. I give him props, man. This guy loves to play the game of basketball. This guy is resilient. This guy perseveres through everything. I don't know if he ever gets back on an NBA roster, but the Jazz may have to suit him up at some point in time. If you move on from a Sexton and you move on from a Collins and a Kessler, you may have to suit this guy up. I don't know if I've ever seen a player with this many lives.
You know what, man? But it's bittersweet. This almost feels like you're taking shots at the Celtics again.
No, I'm not taking a shot at the Celtics. Absolutely not. They cashed in at the right time.
I know, but we also know, like, that was the beginning of the end for him, right? He had almost the highest of the highs. He was literally an MVP candidate.
Yes.
He wasn't like a viable one, but he was top five, and he was a 2-time All-Star. He averaged 29 a game. The Boston Celtics were, like, one of probably the most fun stories in the NBA.
Yep.
That his run, he was electric. He was incredible. Last minute shots, huge mid quarter runs. He was unstoppable. And then injuries, and it must be so tough. I have a lot of empathy for him because, you know, these guys. He's already undersized. He's a local legend, but he, you know, like, kids go their whole life, and this is what he wanted to do, and he made it. And then not only did he make it, he fought through the Sacramento times when he was just a bit player and a bench guy, and he played so well that teams wanted him. And, like, he finally found his spot, and it got all derailed. So it's really hard. I can imagine if that's all you want to do your whole life, and now he's, what, maybe 30, you know, 32, and your whole life's ahead of you, and maybe your NBA career is over. That must be super tough to deal with. So I really feel for him. In a perfect world, he finds a spot on a even if it's a bad team, but they're going to give him a starting spot and let him run and let him play and, like, play basketball. That's what he wants to do, you know. And even in a perfect world, he'd be on a middling team that at least has a shot at making the play-in or something. So the games actually kind of matter. And he you know, let's say he's averaging 15, 16 a game, even off the bench. Like, that'd be amazing. I love that for him. My heart goes out to Isaiah, man, because he had a lot of heart. he seems like a really good guy, and it sucks because basketball is a business, and he got bitten by the business side.
Isaiah Thomas is a guy that I have followed since college because he was playing in the Pac-12 when he was with Washington. When you go back and you look at what an undersized 5'9" guard has been able to accomplish over the course of his NBA career, it is absolutely stellar. And I have to believe that if Isaiah Thomas was 5'11", not 5'9", if he was 6', not 5'9", this guy would have been on an NBA roster all along. I think that, truly, I mean, that's the way I view it. When you go through and you take a look at where he has been throughout his entire career, if he didn't have that 5'9" height, I don't think he'd have a hard time sticking around in the league.
I agree, because, look at Jordan Clarkson. Again, the guy can flat-out score. Isaiah can. And the issue now, though, like you said, at his height, if you're not giving him a long rein, you're not giving him a long leash, and he got in Boston, and he can't get comfortable, you can't put defenders all around him, he is a liability. It is what it is, right? And it's sad. That was, a perfect storm for him in Boston. I bet for him it was like flying, he almost touched the sun, and now he wants it back. And it must be tough. It must be tough.
He's James Holis, always kind enough to join us. James, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Before I let you go, we got to talk about where we can find you on social media.
I'm still on, for the time being, I'm still on, what's now X. It's going to be my X site soon, though. Where the sky is blue, same name, at Snotty Drippin, homage to the great Scottie Pippen. And, that's really it.
Always great to have you here on Drive Time Sports. And, James, I know we'll do it again real soon. I appreciate the time.
You're the man, bro. Thank you.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We're going to be back to do it again tomorrow. We'll talk NFL football. It'll be Football Tuesday. We'll have a great time right here on Drive Time Sports. Until then, be safe. I am out.